So let me say this up front. A few people have said something like this: this series doesn't seem very Christmassy. And we should have maybe said Christmassy, because that's kind of why we're doing this. If we're really honest about it, for a lot of us, the holidays can create all kinds of drama and stress. That's not what shows up on Instagram or in the movies too much. But that song, Better Days, how many of you following the holidays have thought, man, I wish it had been better? And usually it's, I wish this person had been better, that person had been better, the economy had been better, something. So we've decided we wanted to look at this, and so we've been tackling some of these things that end up creating problems for us and the people around us, family, friends, neighbors, and trying to figure out how do we make the most of opportunities that come. Some of you are entering into, there was a survey done of Americans that are traveling for the holidays. The average stay, if they're going out of town, is they're going to stay with family or friends around 4 days. When they ask them how much of that time is really good, they said 3 hours and 50 minutes. So less than 4 hours in 4 days. I'm not trying to be doom and gloom, but if we're honest, there are things we struggle with. And so we did this series, it's perfect because we got a truck that's going to be, it doesn't really drive, but it's got the baggage on it. We're trying to think, using it as illustrations. So what is the stuff maybe I need to deal with so I can be possibly someone that helps make this a better holiday than it would have been otherwise? So we've looked at this thing of unpacking, getting rid of expectations, distractions. Today we're going to be looking at resentment. And resentment is that kind of thing that it's a silent killer, and then it can get really loud. And then next weekend we're going to look at regret. Christmas Eve we're going to look at this thing of control. And it's perfect because it's why God came and why he did what he did. Because our being in control gets us in trouble, and what he offers us is something almost beyond belief. So anyway, we're dealing with this. Today we're going to be looking at resentment. Here's my definition of resentment: a feeling of indignant displeasure or persistent ill will at something regarded as a wrong, an insult, or an injury. And before you say, well, I don't have any of that, just hang on. It's pretty common. I'll just give you some things that might show some evidence of resentment. We relegate this to children, but adults have the same thing too. Christmas Day, you didn't get what you were hoping for. Or you found out that your spouse paid a lot more for what you got than you really wanted. Or someone else gets more stuff or attention than you do. Again, maybe you had to travel. Maybe you're having to host. Again, might not say anything about it, but inside there may be something seething. It could be that money is tight for you. Maybe you're having to share children in a way that is not equitable as far as you can say because of a divorce. And maybe you're having to, Becky and I used to have to do this. We would travel 1,000 miles to get to the same town where both sets of parents lived, and how do you divide up the time? And there's all kind of resentments that can show up there on all sides. Maybe you're not getting much time off work. Maybe you're getting too much time off work. Maybe it's just going to pile up, and you're just thinking, this isn't fair. Everyone else gets, but I'm stuck with this. And here's the thing about social media. And again, I'm not against it, but be careful, because in social media, you're going to see, you're going to get messages galore full of people that are having an awesome time in places you can't afford to go, or don't have time to go, or you can't take it because you got so many responsibilities. And everyone they're with, their family and their friends, all look good and smell good. They're all smiling, have perfect teeth. And you look at your life and you say, this ain't me. Why do they get to have that and I don't? Anyway, resentment's one of these things that we live with. And holidays like Christmas can highlight both the good parts and the bad parts. And we need to be honest about it and look at it. So I was trying to figure out how to illustrate this. And there's a great, it's a cartoon, Dr. Seuss the Grinch. OK, came out in, I guess, about a year ago. So I want you to see the Grinch, and I want you to watch what's happening. Obviously, he's carrying some resentment. He doesn't hide it very well, and his resentment is heightened by people that are seemingly pretty happy. Check this out and see what you think.
Jingle bells, Christmas smells.
Oh, thanks, mister.
Ha.
Hey! Huh. You're a mean one, mister.
Really such an awful day.
Hey, huh? Merry Christmas! Oh. Happy holidays, Sue.
Morning,
season's greetings, folks. Oh. And Merry Christmas!
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. Remember Christ our Savior was born on Christmas Day. To save us all from Satan's power, yeah. When we were gone astray. Oh, tidings of comfort and joy, oh, tidings of comfort and joy.
I need it for my Christmas stuffing.
No.
Well, that's not very nice. Oh, sugar plum.
When you carry resentment, people that are nice just make it more infuriating. And there's actually a proverb about this. When someone's got trouble in their heart, being around someone that always has happy answers just adds fuel to it. But this idea of resentment, it's easy to see in others. In fact, it's very easy to see in others, but what we're trying to do today is look at ourselves. I'm going to do a comparison of anger and resentment. Anger is a normal reaction, a healthy emotion. It just needs to be controlled. There's nothing wrong with anger in and of itself. You have to go back and look at the source of it. Anger, like some other emotions, it's like a light or a buzzer that you have in your car on the dashboard. When your anger comes up, you need to do a timeout and say, I wonder what's going on. Check out under the hood, look at it, and make sure that you don't let it continue. Because if anger's not dealt with, it's going to end up eventually building into some other things, including resentment. Resentment is a deadly mindset that has to be eliminated. And if it's not, it will do unimaginable harm. And in some cases, it's done harm for generations. Some of you are carrying resentment, and you don't even remember what caused it. But you just have it stewing in you. It's been building. It's almost like Velcro. And I'm always picking up things that make me more resentful. And so somehow it needs to be stopped. Listen to what it says in Job 5:2. It says, surely resentment destroys the fool, and jealousy kills the simple. When it comes to resentment, in researching this, I would say that our friends in Celebrate Recovery and 12-step groups have a lot to teach us about this. Part of the reason is people get into, to deal with their resentment, they find ways to cope, and in many cases, those coping mechanisms are really unhealthy. And so when you look at Celebrate Recovery, you look at 12-step, you look at what they've learned, I just want to point out some of these. These are from the big book of AA. This is from pages 64 through 66. I'm just going to excerpt some of this. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. And don't relegate this just to people that have an addiction. It does all kind of harm to people that it's kind of under the hood. Maybe they don't have the outward stuff, but they've got it inward. Goes on to say, it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility. It's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to unhappiness. We have found that in this business of resentment, it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings of resentment, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit. What resentment does is it just closes me in, into my own little cave. And I'm only going to take in data that feeds my resentment because that's the nature of it. The Betty Ford Foundation, the Hazleton Clinic, they've described this whole thing of resentment. I really like what they say. They say resentment is really a combination of two words. Re means to repeat or review, and sentiment, it's a feeling or it's something I've experienced. It means I'm going to relive this thing over and over again. It literally means feeling again. It says resentment, in effect, is mentally replaying the scene countless times a day. And as we do, real wrongs grow worse, and wrongs that were merely imagined assume a life of their own. Resentment does nothing to change the person we resent, nor does it resolve the conflict. Instead of freeing us from the wrongs of others, resentment allows those people to dominate our thinking, a kind of emotional bondage. So, as we're looking at this, I want to show you one more clip. Let me explain this. It would be real easy, if we're not careful, to begin thinking, well, I know someone that's pretty resentful, and I don't really like being around them. They're just bitter, mean people. I don't have anything to do with them. It's easy for us to kind of have an us versus them. The truth is, we need to look at our own resentment, the things that we're carrying, but we also need to have compassion for anyone, because this is kind of it's a frailty that we all struggle with at times. So I want you to watch this. This is later on in the movie of this Grinch. And this is the one time where he's reflective. And what I want you to do is think about it. It shows there's some hope for you and me and for others around us that have this, if we're willing to actually look at it. This is where he kind of opens the door a crack.
From the edge of his ledge way up in the sky, the Grinch felt upset, though he wasn't sure why. It could have been Christmas, all that joy and the such, or some thoughts from his past that he just couldn't quite touch. But whatever it was, it made his heart moan. Though he was used to it now, this being alone. And now safe in his cave and apart from the fray, he reminded himself.
It is better this way.
So I want us to look, since this is Christmas, there's an example that we see regularly that maybe we miss, and that is an example of how to resist resentment, or if I'm in it, how to get out of it. Most of us are familiar with manger scenes. At our house, we have Becky collects these things. We've probably got a couple of dozen manger scenes, and they're fine. I'm not making fun of them, but the problem is it's a snapshot of sorts that doesn't really tell anywhere near the whole story. It's kind of like those family photos you take that you send out in your Christmas card, and everyone just, but you don't see the screaming and the fighting and all the stuff going on prior to that one shot being snapped and then afterwards. So the manger scenes are fine, but this is, we really miss, especially about Mary, there are things we miss about it. Mary is a great example of resisting resentment and developing and building faith. So here's the story of Mary, just in a snapshot. She was a teenage girl from a very, very small village. We would have never heard about her. In fact, anyone within 50 miles would have never known she existed. This was just the way of life then. This village was made up of families that had been there for generations. They were quite content with it. They didn't have aspirations of a lot more than that necessarily, but they were content. And some of you know what it's like if you've ever lived in a small town. And Mary was a typical teenage girl. Her dreams consisted of getting married. She was engaged to a guy named Joseph, who was a carpenter, had a good trade, looking to build a family together, probably build and stay right there where they were, maybe in one of the houses that their family had, or maybe next door to their family. Very happy and content that this was going to be her life. Not bitter, not resentful about that. It's just, this is the way life is. And looking forward to it. And then one day all that changed. Doing her normal everyday things, an angel of God appeared. And let me say this about angels, because some people say, well, you know, that couldn't happen. Let me tell you, if God sent his son Jesus, the creator of the universe, to come and be a baby and to eventually go to the cross to pay the penalty for our sin and be resurrected, wouldn't you expect that there might be some unusual thing signaling that? I have no problem with miracles in the Bible or angels or these things. I have a problem when people manufacture them all the time, but it makes sense in this context that God would do, because this is such an unusual circumstance. And God's angel comes to Mary and said, God has seen you, and you are favored by God. He had seen her life, and he understood this was someone I want to use. He had chosen her. She wasn't perfect, but she had a God-oriented life, and God had an assignment for her, and he said, you're going to give birth to the Messiah, the King, who has come to save his people. And she's a teenage girl. She's thinking, what is going on? I was just going out to get water. And then it starts dawning on her. This is really an angel. This is really happening. And she says a very normal statement. She goes, well, how is this going to happen? I'm not married, and I have never been with a guy. And the angel said, this is going to be a very unique pregnancy. It's not going to have human agency to it. This is the most unusual birth in all of history. It's going to be my son. And leaves. Now Mary's stuck with a few things to think about. Who do I tell? Who's going to believe me if I go tell them? My friends? My parents? Are they going to lock me up? Oh no, Joseph. What do I tell him? And she may have waited for a while, but all of a sudden she starts showing. And she knows she has to tell Joseph, and she tells Joseph what happened, and Joseph, he really does love her. And he thinks she's either a loon or something else. And so he decides, I'm going to divorce her. He was going to do it privately. He didn't want to shame her publicly, which shows his character. But, of course, Mary's out of her mind. And then the angel comes to Joseph and says, no, this is actually what's happening. So Mary and Joseph now, they've got this knowledge that they have. What do you do with that? As she's more and more showing, you just get bigger gowns, bigger robes. How do you deal with it? I mean, these are some tough things to deal with. And her reputation is at stake. This was not her plan. And I'm sure along the way she's thinking, this isn't fair. I mean, great, you know, I get to be a part of this, but look at the cost it's going to be here. This is not what we figured out. She and Joseph worked through it. We don't know how her family handled it or the neighborhood. We don't know that. What we do know is not long before she was to deliver, the government sent out an edict because they needed to strengthen their tax rolls, make sure they were accurate, that everyone had to go to their hometown, their ancestral hometown. And for Joseph, that was Bethlehem. Now, we see these pictures and it's all quaint and all, but can you imagine you're in your last part of your pregnancy and you got to do a 90-mile trek, and there's no Amtrak here. There's no Uber. You're either going to walk or you're going to be on a donkey or a horse, and she's got to make it to Bethlehem. They get there, and because of this government edict, it is overcrowded. There's no place for them to stay. They don't know anybody there, and the best they can do is a stable. And again, we see those manger scenes and it's all cute, the donkey, and sometimes I've even seen them with dinosaurs in them where they're just all looking at baby Jesus and all. This is not a Nova Fairfax. I mean, this is kind of a dangerous place. When you think about disease and all this kind of stuff, you know, there are countries today where they don't name their babies for the first 2 or 3 years because they don't know if they'll survive. The infant mortality rate is so high. I mean, there were some things about this that, and again, we see the pictures and they're all idyllic and they're all happy and glowing and all. And again, I'm not disparaging their character. What I am saying is there were costs to this. And along the way, at any point, Mary could have resented the fact that this is not, I don't like it. Why didn't you pick somebody else? And she's got Joseph as her midwife. She didn't have family. She didn't have the support and all that. There are things that she could have easily fallen into resentment for. And I'll tell you one thing about the Bible is that it does not sugarcoat or spin its heroes and heroines. Mary wasn't perfect. We can see this at other times. But at this point, she handled it well. And she is an excellent example for you and me when we go through things that we don't understand. We don't get it all. We don't know what is God really doing here. You know, not long after this, they're going to be refugees because King Herod wants them killed. He wants baby Jesus killed, and he ends up sending in his troops, and every male child 2 years old and younger is slaughtered in the Bethlehem area. Mary and Joseph escape. This is the story, and this is what we see in Mary. She dealt with some difficult, some painful, some awkward, some tough circumstances. And throughout it, she made the regular decision, I'm going to trust God in this. And here's something to hang on to. Circumstances and other people do not cause resentment. Circumstances and other people don't cause resentment. How I choose to respond can either lead me to faith or resentment. Mary had built her faith on a clear understanding of who God is and that he always works for the good to those who trust and obey him. We're going to look at this in a minute, but she grew up in an atmosphere where this was normal for her. She was Jewish. Her family was steeped in Jewish training and teaching. She regularly learned what the Bible taught. She understood that when they went through the different festivals and holidays, they didn't just go through the motions. They explained what they mean. She understood this. I imagine as a child, her parents had her regularly hearing the stories and reenacting them. And she was in a bigger community where they would talk about this together. There was exposure to it. She saw examples. She had them explained to her. And then she began to experience them appropriately as a child. Parents, I want to tell you that's one of the important reasons for making sure that you pass on to your children. You do your job at home. We try to support that here with our children and youth ministry. But this is important because that creates the foundation for them to rely on when they need to. And some of us are silent. We don't do what we can. And we see in Mary the advantage of giving that foundation. She learned and understood the truth that we see throughout the Bible. It's written in Romans 8:28, but you see it throughout the scripture. It said this, and we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them. That doesn't mean that everything that happens to us is good. There are some things that are horrible and evil and atrocious and meant to harm us. It's saying that if I am trusting God, if I am pursuing his purposes for my life, I've surrendered to him, that he can turn even what others intend for evil and bad, he can use it for good in my life, through my life, to benefit others. It's his promise. And this means everything. That means difficulty, hardship, challenges, things that could easily derail me and could fuel resentment are the same things that can fuel a faith and a greater dependence on God. Mary knew the stories of how God worked in people's lives in the past. And there was one, it was the namesake of her fiancé. Her fiancé's name is Joseph. There was a Joseph in the Old Testament that Mary knew his story really well. You see this in Genesis chapters 37 through 50, and I'd encourage you to read this sometime. I'll give you a synopsis of it. Joseph was a teenager like Mary. He was the next to youngest of 12 brothers. He had 10 older brothers, and unfortunately, he was not parented very well. He was the favorite. In fact, there's a story of this fancy coat that he was given, and the other brothers didn't get one. And they were just, as time goes on, when you show favoritism, it's really a shame because it creates opportunities for resentment in others. And in this case, the older brothers, Joseph was a good guy. He didn't go around doing the wrong things. That made him even more angry at him. They were resentful of their dad and angry. They were resentful of Joseph. And finally, in their groupthink, they decided, we're going to do something about this. Their resentment boiled over the top, and they said, we're going to kill him. So they captured him, and they were going to come up with a way to just say, you know, he got killed by a lion or a bear or whatever. You know, we're going to get rid of him. And before they were able to kill him, a caravan's coming by that's going to another country, and they found out a way to make some money. So they got rid of Joseph and put some money in their pockets, knowing we're done with this guy. He'll be off in Egypt. We won't have to have anything more to do with it. We'll tell Dad he'll be sorry, but we'll be so happy. Joseph ends up in a new country. He has absolutely no standing in that country. He's been bought and sold. He becomes a slave, and he's worked for a government official. And again, remember, the Bible doesn't spin its heroes and heroines. We hear about Joseph and how he responded. He becomes a slave in the household of one of these leaders, and he works his way up to the most trusted servant in the house. He just makes the most of the opportunity he has. Unfortunately, because he was a good-looking guy and attractive, the guy's wife decides she really wants him, and when he turns her down, she claims that he raped her. He gets arrested, he gets thrown in prison. The only reason he wasn't killed, I think, is because I think her husband knew, but to save face, instead of having him executed, tosses him in prison, and he's in there for years and years. And again, while he's there, he builds a reputation of being a man of integrity, a man of honor, not resentful and bitter. But I'll tell you what, the circumstances could have sure fueled that. As time goes on, the king of Egypt is troubled. He's got some dreams and he's got some ideas. Something bad is about to happen, and he talked to his advisors. No one could figure it out. And then one of the cabinet members said, wait a minute, I met a guy in prison. Now let me just say this. We didn't invent the fact that if you work for the government, you may spend time in prison. This has happened a lot. It happened here. One of his cabinet members had spent time in prison because he had gotten the king angry. He had been pardoned, got out, and now he's saying, oh, king, I know a guy. Because Joseph had shown himself to be spiritual. He had a connection with God that was unusual, and so the king met Joseph. The story goes on that Joseph was able to interpret the guy's dream. God gave him the ability to do that at the time, and it rescued a nation from calamity because there was a horrible famine that was going to be coming under Joseph. And Joseph was not only taken out of prison and made part of the cabinet, he became the number two guy in all of Egypt. He was in charge of the whole project of preparing them for the famine to come. He's done well. And then the famine hits. And his brothers, who live in another country, and their family is starving. And they come to that country for aid, having no idea that the one they're going face to face with is the one they sold into slavery. They meet Joseph, and Joseph is now in tremendous power. And the brothers are thinking, he probably thinks like we do, we're going to be toast. And listen to what Joseph says. Joseph replied, don't be afraid of me. Am I God that I can punish you? You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so I could save the lives of many people. Had he been resentful, all he would have wanted was revenge. He resisted that and was able to see that even with these guys intending to hurt me, they were dead wrong. That didn't stymie God's plans for my life. Mary knew this and many other historical accounts in the Bible. And she knew God was not only powerful, but that he was good. And his plans for her would always be good, whether she understood what was happening in the moment or not. And she could trust him. Mary chose to dwell on the goodness of God and his sovereign care for her. And this protected her from resentment. I want you to think about you and your own life and where there might be resentment that you carry. I've not been treated fairly, or these people always do this, or I'm left out, or whatever it might be. There's all kinds of ways that we can build resentment. It may have been there for a long time, or it may be recent. What are you going to do with it? If you let it continue, it will eat you alive and everyone in your sphere of influence. If you're willing to address it, you now, and you put yourself in God's hands, He will use it. He'll use it in your life for good. He'll use it in other lives around you for good. Romans 8:28, and we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to His purpose for them. This is His promise. Philippians 4:8-9, you can read this later, but it's just, if you're going to let your mind camp out or dwell on something, don't let it be the things that fuel resentment. Let it be the things that fuel faith. That doesn't mean you ignore that there are evil and bad things that happen. It's not it at all. It says that you're not going to let that define you or how you approach others, because resentment makes me a victim, and it's a self-imposed victimhood. God wants me to be free of that. Along the way, when you read Mary's story in the take-home sheet, I hope you'll get this and go through it over the next couple of days. You'll see that there is a statement that is said of Mary several times. It said, but Mary kept all these things when she would see God come through and answer prayer, and she'd see His hand along the way. She says, but Mary kept all these things in her heart and thought about them often. Not things to fuel bitterness, but things that fueled her faith. Next week, we're going to be looking at the cousin of resentment, and that is regret. And I think it'll really open some doors and some eyes.